Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Super Beets. Beets are a nutritional gold mine, full of antioxidants and nutrients, but they're a mess to prepare. So just mix Super Beets with 4 ounces of water and boost circulation, relax arteries, and maintain healthy blood pressure. Get the Dr. Hoffman special offer at intelligentbeets.com. That's intelligentbeets.com. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, in which we answer your questions related to nutrition. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the place you send your questions, and we'll answer as many of them as we can. So keep listening to the podcast, because your question is likely to turn up. Unless it's not suitable, extremely long, extremely detailed, we take the liberty of editing questions. Yes. For brevity and relevance. So, yep. What's our next question?
Our next question comes from Tim. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. Will stem cell research allow for aging organ regeneration anytime in the near future? In other words, how close are we to regenerating the body and halting aging? You know, getting replacement parts for each body system. Will it happen in my lifetime? I'm 32.
Well, yeah, that's, I was glad to hear that he's 32, because that is very likely to take place within the next generation.
Yeah.
So by the time this guy is ready for intensive organ regeneration, which may be in his 60s, I think that's going to be definitely a prospect. I think one of the considerations will be, you know, it's going to be all that stuff, the cancer therapies, the life-saving therapies that we'll have available. They'll be so damn expensive that it'll be more a matter of allocation of scarce resources. That's part of the problem. And then what do you do? What are reasonable limits? Will we just have a bunch of super rich people who live to be 200 because they can afford the best therapies, and the rest of people will be consigned to die the old fashioned way, you know, in their 70s and 80s? I think that's sort of a moral and ethical and political question. But coming back to the stem cells, you know, there's actually a lot of integrative physicians who are using stem cells.
Yeah.
And I have to say that I am continue to be skeptical of the efficacy of stem cells, especially when they say that they just infuse them for, you know, no matter what's ailing you. You know, it's like if you got Parkinson's disease, fine, we'll do some stem cells. If you've got Alzheimer's, we'll do some stem cells. If you've got, you know, joint problems, we use some. Well, actually, there is some evidence that targeted application of stem cells directly into the joints, that may be a useful therapy, but it's still got, it gets mixed reviews.
Actually reminds me of a patient that you and I saw recently who has a rotator cuff injury for a long time.
Yeah.
And he's looked into it, and he's going to go see this doctor who's going to inject the site with stem cells.
Right.
To see, I mean, what do you think of that?
Well, no, I think that's, we do have another patient who had a hip problem and started out by getting hyaluronic acid injected into her hip. Didn't help. And then went to a doctor who does stem cells, but does the stem cells the right way, because stem cells can be harvested just from your blood. You know, you can just draw some blood, you know, spin it around and, you know, get some stem cell extract. You can also harvest them from your bone marrow, which is more painful. You have to stick a needle in your bone marrow, and it's, you know, more invasive. And it usually requires real, like a specialty type of doctor to do that and prepare the stem cells in such a way that the stem cells regenerate in the joint. That, I think, is plausible, because the patient said she was really got a good response from that. And, you know, again, with pain syndromes, it's different strokes for different folks. The joint may be so ground down that there's no hope from stem cells. But I think there's a potential for stem cells to be helpful for some people there. The problem with stem cells is that while they are what is called pluripotent, which means that they have the potential to grow into any cell in the body, encouraging them to do so is the problem. So actually, they've only now just approved one type of stem cell for one very narrow type of eye application. And you might say, well, it'd be great for macular degeneration. You regenerate the degenerated macula. Mm-hmm. Well, no, this is some very sort of niche-y, very narrow focus kind of eye problem, whereby they manage to rev up these stem cells and cause them to differentiate into the specialized cells that form the parts of the retina, and that worked, and that's promising, but there's a big gap between what the official research says and the claims of some people who are doing it offshore in other countries, or some people even doing it in this country. But I think I don't know how they have the clearance to do it, but they're sort of a free fire zone for some doctors to claim that the stem cells can be regenerative. So, for example, Parkinson's disease is a great case for regenerating a very specific area of the brain that's associated with movement. And they've been talking about stem cells for Parkinson's disease for 20 or 25 years, but they haven't clinched it yet because, and you better believe that there's a lot of money in this, you know, the Michael J. Fox Foundation and all the, you know, research money going into it. They really want to be able to inject cells into the control center of movement in the brain and get that center to regenerate, because that's not the whole there. It's not like Alzheimer's disease. That's one specific area, but they can't make it happen. As much as they try to tweak and shape and mold and stimulate these stem cells, they can't get them to make the right cells. So the theory that some doctors enunciate is, well, you just give an intravenous of some stem cells and they'll find their way to the right place. Well, really?
We wish, right.
And here's another consideration, too, is there are safety considerations with stem cells. Now, I'm not saying that doctors who are giving stem cells are giving patients cancer, but the ultimate resistant type of cancer is very akin to a stem cell. It's a primitive cell that's undifferentiated. And the concern is, well, what if you put a lot of these cells in the body and they don't go the right way, they go the wrong way?
Mm.
You know?
True.
So
Yeah. Interesting.
So we're hoping that progress is going to be made. I know there's a lot of research undertaken, and there's even political controversy about whether they could take fetal stem cells or whether they, you know, which some groups said, oh, we must use these, aborted fetuses. And other groups are saying, well, no, because that's going to encourage abortion. We don't want to do that. And we don't want people to survive and thrive at the expense of aborted fetuses. You know, this is an ethical argument. And it depends on whether there's a Republican or a Democrat in the White House. You know,
right.
This is going to go forward. You know, it's got tremendous potential for healing degenerative diseases.
Yeah. Well, Tim, in your lifetime, because you're 32, you know, you may see some of that great body of work come to fruition. So,
right.
Yeah.
And we may be right up there with him. When he's 60, we'll be over 100, but hey, that's going to be nothing. It's like, 100 is the new 45.
Right. There you go.
Right.
There you go.
We'll be like entering late middle age, you know.
Exactly.
Okay. So let's hope, because, I mean, that'll mean these podcasts they're just going to have to keep on cranking.
That's it. Oh, boy. Okay.
Okay. We'll never run out of things to talk about.
Honestly, it's true. And the time goes so fast anyway, so it's good. This next question is from Tom. He's concerned about his blood pressure. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. I really enjoy the podcast. Is there any way to get off blood pressure medicine? I'm not overweight, and I exercise. I've just never heard of anybody getting off of it.
Oh, no.
It seems that once you get on it, you're on it for life.
No, by no means. But it really depends, as you know, Layla, because you've seen a lot of our cases here. See, what one strike against this gentleman is he exercises and he's normal weight. Now, if you have someone who comes in who's overweight and doesn't exercise, there's a pretty fair chance. In fact, studies have shown that overweight, sedentary individuals, about 40% of them can get off their antihypertensive medications by losing just 5 or 8% of their body weight.
Exactly,
And so if you're 220 and you lose 11 to 18 pounds and you become active, there's a good chance that you can get off your medication. However, what bothers me is when I see I saw a skinny patient the other day with high blood pressure. What worries me, you're exercising, you're very thin, and, you know, what are we going to do with you? There's some people where either their blood vessels are less flexible or something has flipped in their nervous system, because there is an aspect of, you know, it's called hypertension, where they're adrenalized and they have high blood pressure.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a complex malady. And, mm-hmm. you know, what are some of the things we use for high blood pressure? Let's talk about them.
Oh, well, first of all, I love when a patient goes on a low-carb diet. They're already hypertensive. They're overweight. They're sedentary. We fix the sedentary, and we fix the diet, and they start to shed some weight. They're also shedding some water, which is a good thing. But just the weight loss alone helps them. I've seen many, many cases where people are able to get off their blood pressure medicine.
Yep.
And it's a wonderful thing. We're dancing the jig of joy when that
right.
happens.
But however, you know, on the other hand, I am not one of these holistic doctors who says that all medications are bad. I mean, I got to say, I have a medical training, and I recognize that it's a disadvantage to be on virtually any medication. Some are more benign than others. Mm-hmm. But hypertension, if untreated, is deadly and can increase your risk for stroke, dementia, heart failure, kidney failure. And, you know,
disability for life. Yeah,
it's devastating. So God forbid we have somebody who is very holistically oriented. And for 20 or 30 years, they have been told they have high blood pressure. They go, no, I listen to Dr. Hoffman and Layla, and I'm trying all the things that they're recommending. And one of these days, I'm going to get my blood pressure under control. I know it. I'll just keep trying. And, you know, day in, day out, week in, week out, month in, month out, year in, year out, their blood pressure is, you know, 160 over 110. Mm. And then, lo and behold, they get a stroke. Or they get a heart attack, or they're told, oh, you now have an enlarged heart and you're going to develop congestive heart failure. That can happen. And, you know, it's really no badge of shame if past a certain age you need to take a medication if you're doing everything you can holistically to get things turned around. I mean, you can only do the best you can and let nature take care of the rest. Mm-hmm. And if you have a hereditary predisposition, or for one reason or another, maybe things you've done in your prior life, maybe you smoked for a while, you didn't learn the best diet, predisposed you to high blood pressure, it's not entirely a merit system. And the blood pressure medications are generally stronger than the things we're going to talk about. So let's talk about some things.
Yeah, magnesium. And did I mention magnesium?
Yeah. And the right kind that's absorbable.
The right kind. Magnesium taurate is the favorite for blood pressure, because taurine also helps to shed a little excess water.
Yeah.
And it's particularly good for high blood pressure. We like
antiarrhythmic as well for the heart.
Mm-hmm. Antiarrhythmic. Right. We like fish oil. We like olive leaf. We like pycnogenol.
Yes, beautiful.
Is very good. We like chiolic, the aged garlic,
right?
For blood pressure. I do like some B vitamins also for blood pressure in terms of attacking the stress component of anything like that.
Okay.
If it's cortisol driven, you know, some adaptogens like ashwagandha is also helpful. Arginine.
Okay.
Or maybe super beets.
Yeah, like a nitrate, something that's a nitric oxide building block, precursor. Yeah.
Either that or eat a lot of celery.
Right. Or, you know,
and drink, spinach and some other,
Drink beet juice or take Super Beets, one of our sponsors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. These are all good for blood pressure.
There's even some, I think vitamin D might work in that equation to some extent
vitamin
or another.
D, absolutely, yeah.
You know, what was the other one? You know, interestingly, the B vitamins you mentioned, they may not lower blood pressure, but they actually reduce the risk of stroke in hypertensives.
Yeah.
So the folate, B12, and mm-hmm. B6, because your bottom line is, you know, the bottom line is to avoid the end products, and the high blood pressure itself is just a measurement that we do mm-hmm. that indicates risk. So, you know, if you have slightly high blood pressure, but you still live to be 110, then you're the winner.
Right. Exactly.
So you take the things that prevent problems.
Yeah.
The CM core may be helpful because it helps with insulin resistance. Some studies have shown that the there's a grapeseed extract in that, which is akin to pycnogenol. Its action on the blood vessel walls.
A lot of things to take, Tom.
Right.
And don't be discouraged. Don't be discouraged.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, don't be in denial.
Don't be in denial. Absolutely.
Just get it taken care of.
Right.
Because, I mean, you may do a trial of the natural therapies, but don't let it go too long without, he's on blood pressure medication.
He's on blood pressure medication.
So part of the problem is also to enlist a doctor who's willing to explore what happens when you go off medication. And I'm willing to do that. But many doctors You know, it's a lot easier to put somebody on a medication and keep writing prescriptions than to take somebody off of medication.
That's
because
true.
A, you assume responsibility, and B, you know, you're rocking the boat, and you know, you have to come up with other suggestions. You can't just take off person off medication. You have to give them other alternatives. So, medicine is really stacking the deck towards permanent lifetime prescription of blood pressure medications. And they're sort of betting against the patient's ability to make the lifestyle changes that are necessary to get off.
Which is unfortunate. Yeah. But then, you know, there are a lot of patients who just want that prescription. They want to take a pill because that's their magic pill.
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's hey, you know, we're at a place where you can make personal choices. Unfortunately, we're eliminating the moral hazard of some of those choices because there are people, you know, everybody pays the same insurance premiums. And some people, in effect, are subsidizing others because people with indiscriminate lifestyles consume a vast amount of medical resources. And people who are super careful rarely go to the doctor, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, they do. They have to for some reason. But they don't suffer as many chronic diseases. They don't, you know, the expenditures on medications in the United States soared this last fiscal year. I think it was like up 17%, some astonishing figure.
Well, so, you know, part of that has to do with the pharmaceutical industry marking everything up 3,000%.
Yeah. And also advertising, telling people, to, you know, ask your doctor for this or ask your doctor for that, you know, to encourage people to use more medication rather than discourage them from using medication.
Okay. Our next question comes from Phyllis. Well, not a question. It's a comment, really. A lot of your advice regarding migraine is dietary, which is not always true with everyone. I've gone through the dietary deprivation maze, and this has not helped me at all because my migraines are largely hormonal and fluid retention triggered.
Okay.
What do we do about this?
Okay.
Yeah.
So part of the answer is, you know, I'm not claiming this person hasn't tried, but often people say, I tried everything, and they come to our office and we try them on one thing or another that's different. An example of which might be a dairy-free diet. Dairy, for some people, really sets off headaches. Any kind, not just cheese, but, any, you know, so there might be some other dietary modifications that might be helpful. I agree that there's some people who have really dead-end migraines that really require pharmaceutical management. Other people have migraines that may be amenable to like a major lifestyle change that I have to like retire, meditate every day, you know, do intensive biofeedback. And that's not just, this is not just going to happen because they have, you know, responsibilities and they have careers.
I would at least test the person first for, you know, food allergies, because there's a lot on the list of the foods to avoid on a migraine list that may not necessarily be part of the food allergy panel. So it's I think it would be in the person's best interest to uncover anything else that might be causing any kind of.
Did this person say they tried a Feverfew and they tried Butterbur? And they tried
coenzyme
Q10. No,
they just tried the dietary guidelines.
So there's certain things to try.
Containing foods and chocolate and wine and all those things. You know.
So that doesn't help everyone. And if it did, people could just go to the internet and they'd never end up coming to our office. So most people have been there, done that with that. So higher doses of riboflavin, you know, up to 400 milligrams a day. Coenzyme Q10 has been shown to be helpful. Butterbur, Feverfew.
Magnesium,
and we use intravenous magnesium in some of our migraine patients with great results. We have actually a couple of staff members who are subject to migraines, and they know that when they're coming down the migraine, it's easy for them because they can just say, can I just clock out and take an intravenous magnesium for a half an hour? And they get, you know, really, it heads off the headache. It just cuts it off at the pass.
Is that the Myers cocktail?
The Myers cocktail, here's another one that I will suggest, and I might try to get these people as a sponsor because it's a really interesting product. It's called Ausanil, A-U-S-A-N-I-L. It's an over-the-counter product developed by a neurologist to treat his own migraines. www.ausanil.com, spelled A-U-S-A-N-I-L.com. I don't know where they came up with that name. It is a capsaicin spray. Now, capsaicin is a hot pepper. Now, you
don't spray that in your eyes.
No, I understand. But, you know, and you may think, well, that's the last thing I want to put up my nose. But it does something to the blood vessels. It actually helps. So it's available without a prescription. The active ingredient is capsicum, which is a hot pepper. And it says that eosinophil nasal spray will sting upon use, but that's a good thing. It means the spray is working. Your headache is about to go away.
Wow.
So, you know, it's worth exploring. And I'm going to, you know, I want you to write it down as well, because remind me if we have a patient who's not responding that we should at least give it a shot, because, you know, what are you going to do? You spend like $19.95 for an over-the-counter remedy that's considered homeopathic. It's not even prescription. And, you know, worse come to worse, it doesn't work.
Wow.
And it's, you know, it's very safe. So even for regular headaches, cluster headaches, tension headaches, chronic daily headaches, caffeine headaches, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Wow. All right. Phyllis, thank you for your comments and your question. Okay. Let's see here. This next
we have
question,
time just for one quick question.
Quick question. Diane writes, my 34-year-old son has gingivitis.
Right.
All of his blood work is fine, but his vitamin D is very low, so he's taking some.
That will help the gums, actually.
That can help the gums. Yep. Any advice? Because he's on antibiotics every time he goes to the periodontist.
Well, obviously, what's his diet?
Yeah. Well, we don't know. Watch his diet, definitely. But another wonderful thing for gum health is doing is taking CoQ10.
Okay.
But lots of it.
Uh-huh.
Also, at least 400 milligrams.
Also get the Spry Dental Defense System with toothpaste and mouthwash and, you know, gums and drops that you can apply. And it's really the theme of that is 4 a day. You have to apply it 4 times daily. And it has a remarkable effect not just on tooth decay, but also on gum disease.
Yeah.
So that's worth exploring. There was actually some evidence that folate might help the gums. And for a while they were making folate mouthwash. I don't think that's still available because I'm not sure it's that helpful. But actually, the new thing on it is that vitamin D plays a role, because vitamin D is an infection fighter. And gingivitis is an example of inflammation and infection simultaneously. So, I mean, obviously he needs to get on a, I mean, who knows? This is a teenager, right?
That 34-year-old.
Oh, no, 34.
34-year-old.
Okay.
Another thing that might help, what I found in my travels, tea tree oil.
Okay,
massage into the gums.
Massage into the gums or take tea tree oil mouthwash.
Take vitamin C. Take some vitamin C. Take some vitamin A. These are immune boosters. Vitamin E.
Well, the most classic nutritional deficiency disease that was discovered by James Lind in, I don't know, like 1775 or something, or around the time of the American Revolution, was scurvy.
Yeah.
And what they used to do is they used to give British sailors lemons and limes. They used to load them on the boats for these long voyages. That's why they call them limeys. And the cardinal symptoms of scurvy are, number one, skin hemorrhages and easy bruisability, which a lot of people have these days, right?
Yeah.
But also bleeding gums.
Mm-hmm.
Bleeding gums. So they loosened teeth. And so a lot of the sailors had this scurvy. And they didn't know what it was but they had an inordinate craving. They said, give me some fresh fruit. They said, well, yeah, but we're like, we're 3 months away from the next tropical port. And you know that there's not a lot of fresh fruit, fresh citrus fruit in England in the winter.
Yeah. This is true.
Or wasn't then. There is now.
Yeah.
So that's the deal.
Thank you for your question, Diane.
It's a great question, because I think it's of great practical importance, because more people lose teeth these days because of gum disease than because of tooth decay. Gum disease is really the new dental challenge, and it's treated with chronic antibiotics, but I think there are better ways to deal with that.
Yeah. All right.
All right, so that pretty much wraps it up for today because we've used up all our time, and, you know, time flies when you're having fun.
It's
and
true.
I hope that the time has flown for you. We've answered a lot of questions and had an interesting discussion, so keep on listening. If your question wasn't answered today, don't despair because we'll get around to it. Linda's got a big stack of questions already lined up for next week, but keep them coming. Radio program at AOL.com is the place to go for questions, and we'll continue with Q&A with Layla next week. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks, Layla, for joining us.
Thank you.
And this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.